Veteran Affairs Division call to order, and would Representative Lewick please lead us in the pledge.
My order.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First of all, I apologize for getting started late here, but I wanted to make sure this is a small committee, and I wanted to make sure we had everybody here and to start our business. And we have three bills in front of us today, and we're going to kind of go in reverse order. We're going to start in House File 299. Is Representative Heintzman available? Okay. What we'll do then is go with House File 147, and I'm here, so we'll have a change of the guard here.
Before we proceed with your bill, we have the minutes from February 2nd. Representative Lewick, have you had a chance to look those over?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would move their adoption.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Representative Detmer, would you care to move House File 141 or 147? You had mentioned.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House File 147 and it be referred to property tax and local government division.
Proceed to your bill,
Mr. Chair and members. This is some pieces of legislation we've been working on for the last couple sessions. And basically, the crux of it is the veterans extending the effective period of homestead market value exclusion for the surviving spouse. I think four sessions ago in Minnesota, if you are a surviving spouse of a veteran who was totally disabled 100%, during that time frame that you're caring for your spouse, you got a $300,000 for your property tax. And if your spouse was 70% disabled, it was up to $150,000. And that was only for if the spouse, if the veteran passed away, that only was extended for two more years. Mm-hmm. We then extended it for 5 years, and then last session, 8 years. What House File 147 will do, it will extend it indefinitely as long as the surviving spouse of the disabled veteran lives in the home. It would be that benefit would be lost if they remarried or sold the property. So that's the crux of the piece of legislation. We'd like to make it indefinite for that surviving spouse. And we do have a testifier here.
Kate, would you come forward and identify yourself for the record, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the Vice Chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. And I'm also the director of the honor flights here in the Twin Cities. We take World War II veterans to Washington, D.C. for free. And this is a bill that is needed in the fact that most of the people who are the 100% disabled folks, there are a lot of seniors in this, and I deal with the World War II veterans, and many of those family members are taking care of their disabled husband or wife, whatever the situation is there. And they've lived in this home for umpteen years. It's paid for, and they're struggling to keep it going. And the thing is about this is that to have the opportunity to have this widower or widow be able to stay in that home after their husband or wife is deceased, the veteran, is an equitable thing. That they shouldn't have to get rid of that house. They usually don't. All they're living on is Social Security. Is that mine? Sorry. I just got this yesterday.
Go ahead. Please proceed. That's fine.
Do I get fined for that? But it's an opportunity to take care of this. Most of the young folks that are these 100%ers, they don't have homes already anyway. And this would take care of a small part of the 100% disabled veterans who are out there that would be able to just live their final years not knowing that they have to pay that property tax after their husband or wife dies who was a veteran. I think it's just the right thing to do. And we went from nothing to 1 year, then 5 years, and now it's 8 years. The county assessors who had talked to us about previously said, I asked them specifically if it was going to make a big difference in their county revenues from property taxes, and he says it's such a small part of it really wasn't going to affect it because it's disseminated out all the property owners throughout that particular county, and it is, you know, it's a few dollars or $5 to $10 a year that it would affect those people who would have to have that situation.
Very good. Are there any questions? Representative Ward?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate your bill. I was working with a woman this morning whose husband is 70% disabled from the Iraq wars. And Gulf Wars. So they're still fairly young. And she was telling me how grateful she is for this concession on the homestead. He takes quite a bit of care and will continue to take quite a bit of care. And as I said, they're young. The increased risk of his developing ALS because of his disability and exposure to chemicals, I think this would make a huge difference in their lives. In his security, sense of security, and knowing that she'll be better able to stay in their home. Yeah. So thank you very much.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair, I think we also need to realize that this exclusion applies as well to the homesteads of surviving spouses of service members who die and are service-connected caused by serving in the active military. Example of someone being killed in action in combat or by accidents or dying of diseases or otherwise. So this also covers those people too. So I think it's a good thing we can do.
Yes, Representative Newsom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Detmer, for bringing this forward. As you know, we've been working on this for some time. I just question whether or not you've been contacted by the Association of Minnesota Counties at all.
Not this year, we haven't, no.
Okay. Yeah, I know in the past we were. Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Representative Detmer, did you have anyone else to?
No, I think it's going to be going on to the Division on Property Taxes, and I renew my motion.
Before we do that, is there anyone from the audience who wishes to testify for the bill? Yes, would you come down and identify yourself for the record, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, apologies. My name is Matt Hilgard. I am with the Association of Minnesota Counties. Good to see you again, Representative. I'm sorry for not getting in touch with you a little earlier. I'm up here today not to argue the intent of the bill, just to make folks aware of the property tax, what happens to the property tax system in counties that have this. We have one county that contacted AMC, Carlton County, up in northeast by St. Louis County. For them, this bill, and again, this isn't about the intent of the bill, but for pure county structure property tax mechanisms, this meant a lost property tax capacity of over $28 million. And for that county, that's $268,000 that they're missing out on, or is shift to another tax capacity jurisdiction. So the Department of Revenue does have some sheets available, and I'd be happy to forward that to committee members of the shifts that happen with this exclusion. And again, AMC is not arguing the intent of this legislation. If you talk to any of those county commissioners, they're honored and happy to have veterans in their communities. The question is, you know, if it's a state program, should the state pay for it, or is there any kind of reimbursement that could be given to counties? So that's the only thing I have to testify today.
Yes, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Detmer and the testifier. That is an enormously surprising figure. Do we have any documentation to back that up? I'm shocked, and I really wonder about that.
Mr. Bogart?
Chair and Representative, I'd be happy to get that list of the county breakdown to members, and agreed. And Carlton County is not a large county by any means.
I think we also need to, that's not just with this bill. That's the total, what's been going on for, you know, since we changed the statute before. It's not just with this bill, right? Okay.
Chair, members.
Yes. Mr. Bogart.
That is correct.
Representative Ward, did you have Representative Lewitt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would ask the question, you know, we've got a piece of this that's in place right now, so this $28 million that's brought forward, are they talking about the next 50 years, or are they talking about next year? Or I'm more than puzzled, to say the least, by that number. And I guess another element of that is, so what portion is that of the entire market value for Carlton County? What percentage is it? Are we talking, are they 10, 20, 50 billion dollars worth of market value? I just have some very huge questions about the validity of that number.
Mr. Bogart?
Chair, members, I'd be happy to get those statistics to you. And remember that $28 million is the net tax capacity of all the properties in that district. So it doesn't represent a $28 million loss. The loss in property taxes would be about $268,000. So that's the number that we're talking about. But I'd be happy to get you those statistics.
So, if, Mr. Chair, so my understanding is right, that $268,000, that would be dispersed amongst all the other taxpayers. Okay, mm-hmm. Got you. Okay.
Any other questions? If not, I'd renew the motion of House File 147. To go to property tax and local government. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members.
We're going to exchange the gavel here again, Representative.
House File 299, Representative Heinzman.
Thank you.
Representative Hines, welcome to our committee. Would you introduce yourself for the record?
Sure. My name is Josh Heinzman. I am the representative in the Brainerd-Baxter area. That's House District 10A.
Okay. Well, welcome. And I will move your bill. House File 299 will be referred to the Committee on Taxes.
All right.
Please proceed.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I am obviously here to present my bill. I'm honored to chief author this bill and to begin to move it through the process. To put it real simple, this bill would exempt military pensions from state income tax. Obviously, this is not a new idea. This is something that has been talked about for a lot of years in Minnesota. I think that there are folks on both sides of the aisle that have carried this at one time or another, and I guess I am having an opportunity now. I'm very grateful for that opportunity to move it now. Over the last few months, I've heard throughout my district again and again from a lot of business owners, and even in committee, I've heard I'm on higher ed finance and then also on environment policy, about some from time to time business owners will testify, and I've heard a discussion about the need to have highly skilled professional people, and that in Minnesota we're missing that piece of the business puzzle here in Minnesota. And I think that's something to consider. I think this bill would attract people to Minnesota that might not otherwise consider Minnesota. My understanding, having not served and having not spent 20 years in the military, having heard from other folks, is that it's pretty clear during that retirement phase, you get a pretty good idea what states are friendly to retirement. If you're looking at a state, and I think in a military context, people are generally moving around, and it's not you're not necessarily connected to one state or another, and you're comfortable looking for a state that's friendly to you as a retiree. And I'd like to see more of those folks, professional, highly motivated, and I think skilled people coming to the state of Minnesota. I think this is a great opportunity to try to attract those people. With a current $1 billion surplus in Minnesota, it seems reasonable to try and attract those people to live here in Minnesota rather than other states that might be more friendly. Currently, Minnesota is only one of a handful of states that tax military pensions fully, and I think previous fiscal notes have put the cost of this bill at around $23 million, and I really believe this would be a reasonable price to pay to try to create a much more positive situation in Minnesota for retiring veterans. So thank you.
Are there any questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Newton.
Mr. Chair, I it's not so much a question as a comment, and perhaps Mr. Donne even knows some of the numbers, but as I pulled up the military pay scales, and I know we've got at least one four-star general that's retired in Minnesota, under this bill, we would be excluding somewhere between 160 and 175,000 in retirement pay. Not base pay, but retirement pay. And I don't know, you know, how many officers, how many senior people we have. I would benefit from this bill more than I would from the bill that you had the other day. But I think it makes more sense for us to keep a cap on the bill so that those of us that had somewhat senior positions are not overly benefiting. We want to look out for the younger or the less ranking people in the military, I think. So I won't be supporting this bill because I think the amount is going to be too much.
Representative, you have some testifiers?
Okay. I do. Ralph Dene is here to testify to this bill, and I might have a comment for Mr. Newton.
Mr. Dene, would you introduce yourself for the record?
Yes, sir. My name is Ralph Dene. You've all seen me here many times before because I come to help push bills through the legislature. Representative, to answer your question, you got to remember, is that 50% of that general salary, or is that his full salary?
Yeah. Mr. Chair,
Representative Newton,
that general salary would be in the neighborhood of $240,000, and this would be 75% of that because they have over 30 years service.
Mr. Janine.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in the past, and I will attempt to get it, I had gotten a breakdown before of everyone from DOD by rank in the United States, in Minnesota, to tell you how many 4 stars, 3 stars, 2 stars, all the way down. I will attempt to get that again. They're a little bit stingy about giving out that statistic, but I will attempt to get it for you. But going back to trying to make Minnesota the place I would like to see, and I know I've brought it up before, I want to see my son-in-law and my daughter back in Minnesota. And as long as we persist in not giving any kind of tax break on retirement salaries, people just do not come back to Minnesota because of it. In the tax committee at the Senate that I was at last week, a testifier there said that a company from Texas was trying to relocate to Minnesota, and they couldn't get any of their employees to come up here because most of them were military retirees, and they refused to move up to Minnesota. And I understand that. I've been working on this bill now for 14 years, 13 years. I've seen a lot of testimonies, and often not, committee members themselves say, yeah, my son-in-law is not coming back, or my daughter's not coming back. I think all these people would love to see their relatives here, but I think it's the right thing to do for Minnesota businesses. This is about bringing highly qualified men and women back to Minnesota to work at good-paying jobs that they're going to pay taxes on. When you bounce around the world for 20 or 30 years, you don't own a house. A lot of times you don't even have a car that's in too good a shape. I see a couple chuckles there that, yeah, when I got out, my car had 140,000 miles on it, and my furniture had gone from North Carolina to Japan to California and back to Minnesota. So it was kind of beat up, but that's part of what you pay when you spend that much time in the military. But this is about jobs. This is about bringing more income into the state. This is about bringing more money into our colleges. As I've stated before, you know, Minsky loves military retirees because we bring all that money back that can be spent on our education in Minnesota. Employers with the new mandatory insurance would really love these retirees because guess what? They don't have to pay for their insurance. They're bringing their insurance with them. So employers would really love to get these people back into the state. So there are many, many, many reasons why, and the one I understand, sir, about this being a total exempt bill, but whatever bill we can get through this year, I think all of them should be considered on their merits. Each one has its good and its bad, and I thank all of you for your time. Any questions, I'll be glad to answer them for you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Donay, and for the work that you've done since you've left the military and just supporting military issues here in the state. And as the chair of this committee, I would like to listen and bring forward any veterans bill that deals with this subject. I don't care who gets the credit, which side of the aisle gets the credit, but we need to at least listen to these bills, listen to the testifiers that are coming in, and we'll try to do something this year to at least get our foot in the door in that tax committee and do something. And maybe this is the year we can do it. Representative, you have another testifier that you want to bring down?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do. Okay. I have Mr. Charlie McAdon, who has served and has a pension that would be affected by this bill, who lives in my district and would like to have a chance to just share his feelings with the committee.
Okay, thank you, Representative Heisman. Welcome to our committee, Mr. McAdon.
Thank you, sir.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Charlie McAdon. I'm a disabled veteran. I have 8.5 years of military service. I'm not a retiree. I speak in favor of this bill. In fact, Mr. Representative, I'm going to shoot a hole in your philosophy. I was just across the street talking with the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs. Three-star general. General. Three-star general. Four-star general. It has nothing to do with how much you make for your retirement. Your retirement is based on points. Our commissioner has 28 years in the National Guard. He gets 2 points for each month, regardless of his rank that he serves, because he's in the National Guard. He serves 2 days a week, a month, plus points for the summer vacation, et cetera, et cetera. He is nowhere near the maximum that a three-star general can get in his retirement income. Okay, so four-star general means nothing. You need to know the man's record. Was he in the reserves? Was he in the National Guard? Was he full-time active duty all the time? So that's very impressive to a lot of people, four-star general, unless you know the difference. I'd just like for the committee to understand that. Rank play is very little in how much income, how much retirement they get when they get up in the higher ranks. As for the enlisted ranks, I'm sure you know, Command Sergeant Major, that it's a little bit different. This bill, these guys go for 20 years minimum, 30 years maximum retirement. These servicemen, these veterans, they're away from their families probably three-fourths of the time while they're on duty. They don't go home at night and go to bed most of the time. They're in combat zones, okay? People are shooting at them all the time. They lay their life on the line. They're on duty 24 hours a day. They can't quit that job just any old time they feel like it. Okay? We're not talking about policemen, firemen, anybody else. The least we can do, and like Mr. Heintzman said here, I believe there are only six, maybe seven states in the entire nation that still tax veterans' pension at all, in any way, shape, or form. So, like I said, in the media, not the Metro media, but I read in the outstate media, they said, well, then if you do that, you're going to have to give it to the policemen, and you're going to have to give it to, they even went so far as to say, you're going to have to give it to retired teachers. Not a comparison. When was the last time you saw a retired teacher spend years and years and years away from his or her family, 24 hours a day in the trenches? There's not a comparison. So there's nothing to worry about where the teachers, the firemen, the policemen are going to come forward next year and say, well, we want the same thing. That's all I have to say. I speak in favor of this bill. These veterans have earned it. Minnesota, we need to keep these veterans here. When they go for their debriefing, when they're ready to retire, they're told right out, you don't want to retire in these six states, these seven states, whatever it is, because this is where they're going to tax your income. What do they do? Why would they come here? Why would they come to Minnesota? They're already educated. They're highly employable. They not only for themselves, but their wives, their spouses also, wives and husbands in either case. They bring nothing but assets to our community. If a veteran retired here in Minnesota, let's say he was a male, and he brought his wife with him and his family, his kids, they start to work, they're gainfully employed, they pay income tax on their wages, the spouse works, nine out of every 10 families have two people, wage earners, two-person wage earners, they pay income taxes. It's just it's a win-win situation for us. I speak highly in favor of this bill, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. McAdon. And are there any questions of the testifier? Okay. Are there anybody in the room here that would like to come down and make some comments? Okay. Again, I made the comment before that there's about four or five of these pieces of legislation that are going forward. I'd like to hear them in the committee and send them off to other committees, and eventually this might be the year that we can do something. Representative Luke, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Unbeknownst to Chairman and a number of us here, there was actually another committee took place in the McGregor area over the weekend. They'd watched our last committee meeting and looked at the first bill that we dealt with here, and they had quite a discussion in the VFW and in the Legion halls over the last week on the they used the word cap on retirement, the bill that went ahead of us, this one, and it was amazing. And this comes from predominantly retired enlisted folks. This gentleman, Mr. Lowell Bartel from McGregor Army vet, retired. They looked around, talked among themselves, and that cap, unlike this bill, which basically frees the entire retired amount up, would disqualify most of them from being eligible. The problem is they come back here with that retirement and they go work. You know, there's a perception that these folks come back and vegetate. That's, we well know, that's not the, that's generally not the case. So they just did a head count and they found one out of about a dozen that would be eligible under that previous bill. So it's very important that we understand that the comment about the very senior people here that may be drawing a higher wage, we need to make sure that we take a look at the whole picture here. And so this would make sense. I think it's time that Minnesota backed up and quit trying to, for lack of a more intelligent comment, nickel dime people because they've been successful. And more power to somebody that can retire at four-star level. And I sure hope they come and bring those wages here to Minnesota. So I fully support this bill.
Yeah, thank you, Representative. And just maybe to clarify the difference between the bill that we heard, 137, and this bill. 137, when we say a cap, we put a cap on, it'd be $1,500 per year up to 20 years. So that's $30,000 that when you sit down and do your taxes, you can subtract from your gross income. And so it treats everybody basically the same. And and we'll be hearing other bills too. And Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for my tardiness. I had another meeting that I needed to be at, but I am very happy and pleased that Representative Heisman has brought this forward. As you've mentioned, Mr. Chair, we do have five bills that deal with this matter, and this being my fifth year on veterans and stuff, this topic is no stranger to this committee or to the legislature, and we're very pleased and in a good position to have the tax chair on our committee as well to hear this kind of thing and to hopefully get it to his committee so we can get some action on that. And so we need to do something on this. These wages for, I should say, these retirement benefits for the most part were generated outside the municipal and corporate limits of the state of Minnesota because they were people who were in various different states or overseas doing what we've asked them to do in the military. And so there should be some kind of provision in here. And so again, I thank Representative Heisman for bringing this forward and for others who are doing this. But just on a side note, Mr. Chair, Representative Heisman apparently did not get the memo that a red tie was much more appropriate today for dress in front of the committee than a blue tie. So I'm just making that observation as I look around the room. So perhaps a piece of advice to freshman legislators is to read all of their memos before they come to committee.
Thank you, Mr. Representative O'Driscoll and Representative Heisman. Is this your first test bill in a committee?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you, members. This is the first bill that I have presented, and I, on one hand, I'm very grateful for the opportunity and honored to do that, but on the other hand, I feel that I'm not yet prepared to do it justice, so I'm doing the best I can, and thankfully I've got some help with me today.
Well, Representative, you did a great job, but I think any other freshman that I know there's quite a few freshmen, when they come into my committee, they should probably bring some goodies, too, so just... Purcell? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd regarding Representative Heinz from the tire, I commend him on his Air Force Blue, so thank you. I'm going to speak again the bill, though, and for some of the same reasons that Representative Newton talked about, and I've was supportive of the bill that you presented, Representative Detmer, and we've discussed that. And I know in past years I've raised the issue, well, why don't we provide some kind of tax-exempt status or exclusion for all veterans in Minnesota, whether they're retired or not. If you serve 2 or 4 or 6 or 8 or 10 or whatever it was, so you get so much per year of service. And it's in that vein that I say I think there needs to be some kind of a cap on this, because what I was told when I brought this up about all veterans having some kind of a tax exclusion was it's too much money. Too many veterans in Minnesota, and you add up all the years and times whatever, and it's a big dollar sign. And how are we going to handle that fiscally? So I think there needs to be some kind of a cap on this. And you know, my hat goes off to those who stayed for the 20 or 30. It wasn't me, and there's a lot of us that didn't do that. And a lot of respect for the intent of the bill. I have no problem with that. But by golly, we're starting to write off a lot of money here, and that's I think the fiscal note is going to be the telling tale on this. So I just need to say I'm not in favor of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Purcell, and I think we need to realize there's approximately 370,000 veterans that live in Minnesota, and I think the last count that I got, there's only about 4.7% of those that are actually retired veterans that are here after, retired here after 20 years or more, or medically retired. So that means we have about between 18,000 and 19,000 veterans that actually live in Minnesota that are retired here, and a large majority of those are over 60. So What does that tell you? Are the young ones coming back? Are they going to stay here? And the Guard and the Reserve, you don't start drawing any retirement until you turn 60. So after 20 years, if they went in right after high school, they're in their 40s. And we do want that workforce to come and be part of our workforce here in Minnesota. So, Mr. Donais.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to add another thing and ask a question. Those of you that know those four-star generals, are they sitting at home on the end of a fishing pier fishing, or do they run businesses? Mm-hmm. How much taxes are they paying in their businesses, and how many employees do they have working for them? You're penalizing the veterans who have achieved a goal of becoming to the top of their structure, whether it be myself as a D9 Master Gunnery Sergeant in the Marine Corps, or whether it be a four-star general. You're saying, you guys worked really hard all those years, but it doesn't make any difference to us because we don't want to do anything for you. Well, when Mama says I've had enough of Minnesota, I'm going over to Wisconsin because my pension isn't going to be taxed. That's why many of the people who come back here because they have family here. And at some point in time, you say, okay, how much is it worth to be back with our family? And as I stated earlier, I'm not going to get my son-in-law and my daughter back here because he refuses to live here. His home state's Michigan. There's no tax on his pension in Michigan. So if they come back at all, that's probably where they're going to go. But I think it's wrong that you're trying to penalize those people who got to the top of their position and say, we're not going to give the break to those lower folks on the totem pole because you guys did so well and you came back to Minnesota. I think it's a punishment against the other enlisted folks and stuff in the state, and I just don't think that's fair, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Donais also. By not voting for this, it's not an attempt to penalize anything. I would like to see a portion of military pay excluded, and I think we have to get our foot in the door, as the chair has mentioned. And if we exclude all military pay, I think the fiscal note is going to be so large that we're going to lose everything. And I would rather see us gain something than lose everything. So I will continue to vote against this.
Well, thank you. And being that there's no other witnesses, and we have one more person that would like to make some comments from the public. Please introduce yourself again.
Charlie Macadon, disabled American veteran, from Representative Heintzman's area. Mr. Purcell, you were off base. You attempted to derail this bill. It has nothing to do with all veterans in Minnesota. Absolutely nothing to do with all veterans in Minnesota. It's based on retired military veterans in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair.
Reverend Purcell, I think we're a little misunderstanding here.
I'm not trying to, Mr. Massey, from one disabled vet to another, eh?
Yes, sir.
I'm not trying to derail it based on all. I said I had tried to get that in previous bills for the last number of years.
I understand that.
I disagree with this bill because it has no cap. That's my disagreement.
You brought up the point, sir.
I did, and I just clarified it for you.
Let's make sure we go through the chair, please.
Thank you, sir. I just didn't want to see this bill go by way of veterans. All veterans are apolitical. We're Democrats, we're Republicans, we're independents. We don't come here looking for a political gain. Please do not attempt to distort this, sir, by mentioning the fact that it's all veterans. It's not all veterans. It's very few veterans, as was stated by others. Thank you, sir, for your help.
Thank you, Mr. McFenn. With that, I renew my motion that we refer House File 299 to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion passes. And we'll have a change of the guard again.
We're now going to take up House File 141. Representative Detmer, would you care to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I House File 141. I move that referred to State Government Finance. And if we could have the
talk to your bill, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we could have also the two gentlemen come down here, for one from the Department of Veterans Affairs and also Department Administration. Mr. Chair and committee members, last year we passed some legislation that, in terms of a bill established authority of the Commissioner Administration to certify businesses as veteran-owned small business for the purpose of state small business procurements. The bill also mandated a bid preference program for veterans-owned small businesses for the county and the local government projects funded by the GO bond proceedings. And it passed through the legislature, and it was signed into to law, except the funding for it was not, it was pulled out in the conference committee for one FTE that would work with the Department of Administration to certify veterans own small businesses. Currently, if you own a veterans-owned small business or want to be a veterans-owned small business, you would have to be certified through the federal VA. And that has been a time-consuming process for a lot of individuals that wanted to start a business and get certified. Many times it would keep them away from even going through the process. And I felt that, and many people felt that we could do this right in the state of Minnesota. And so if we could maybe have the two agencies here talk about their process. I know my goal with through this piece of legislation is that it would allow the Department of Veterans Affairs to let the Department of Administration know that this particular person is a veteran, and then the Department of Administration would do the certification process. And we do have an amendment. If you look in your packet, we have the A150028 amendment, and I would like to move that.
Okay, proceed to explain your amendment.
Basically, the commissioner would then certify the small business as a majority-owned operating as a veteran. And the Commissioner of the Veterans Affairs must verify that the owner of the small business is indeed a veteran, according to Section 197.447. And
we're going to recess briefly to the call of the chair.
Okay. Committee members and chair, I apologize. We were working on an amendment early this morning, and we are working on the A150028 amendment. And I'd like to have the two agencies here just kind of briefly talk about that.
Amendment.
Yeah. Okay, we are back in session, and
we got to get the amendment.
Proceed to the A150028 amendment.
And Mr. Chair, Mike McKelney, for Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and to speak to the amendment, essentially what this amendment will do is it will give MDVA the opportunity to ensure that the person who owns the business is in fact a veteran as defined by 197.447, and that will prevent potential problems from arising later. So that's what this amendment does. It gives MDVA an option to in fact ensure that the veteran is in fact a veteran by state definition.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kurt Yoakum, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Administration. In our conversations getting up to this point with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, it had always been our intent that we would be working with them on the verification of who is indeed a veteran. And so I will defer to the Department of Veterans Affairs for what is the best way, making sure that the language works for them. But that has definitely been our intent with what I believe that the chairman's intent is putting that forward.
Any questions for Mr. Yoakum or any of the testifiers? If not, Representative Detmer?
Well, I would like to, again, move this amendment that we just discussed so that I get the bill in the form that I want it in.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment's adopted.
Again, that was the A50028, and I have another amendment by Representative Newton. Governor Newton, do you want to go to the chair?
Okay. To your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And essentially, this does the same thing. This defines a veteran in accordance with 197.447, and it sort of clarifies the language as to what is a veteran and who would qualify.
I accept that as a friendly amendment, Mr. Chair.
Yes, and that is the A2 amendment. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All in favor of the A2 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Passes. Uh, Is there anyone else that would like to give testimony to House File 141?
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe I should discuss a little bit more the House File 141. This is something we've been working on for a few years. I know there's probably the two agencies would like to make some comments. So there's also a testifier here that would like to make some comments. But mainly it is to allow the veterans-owned small business to be certified here in the state of Minnesota and allow them to then the legislation will also require municipalities, counties also to set up a policy on how they're going to deal with veteran preferences. And this is something that we've been working on also for quite a while. So with that, I'll be open for questions, but I'd like to have some testimony here from the two agencies that will be really looking after this piece of legislation, making sure that it goes in the right direction.
Okay, would the representative from those agencies, again, introduce yourself for the record? And
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, once again, my name is Kurt Yoakum, Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Administration. And I think coming from the executive branch, the blue tie is okay. I apologize for not having the red tie today. So.
That's quite all right.
First of all, on behalf of the department, I want to thank Representative Dittmer for moving forward with this bill. First of all, I should say my comments are related to Sections 1 and 6 of the bill. That's the portions of the bill that refer to the Department of Administration. And with Representative Dittmer moving this forward, I think as he already mentioned in his testimony, the state has had a veterans preference in procurement or purchasing for several years, and the state has, per statute, has accepted the certification that's been done at the federal level, and we have not had a certification program at the state level for this amount of time. We just haven't had the resources to do it. And the statute allowed us to accept federal certification. Last year, at the end of session, legislation passed implementing or mandating a state certification program that could run concurrently with the federal certification. So somebody could either submit the federal certification that they've already received or go through a state certification process, but as the as Representative Dittmer noted, no funding was attached to that, and with the expectation that that would at least that issue would be revisited this session. So we're quite pleased that Representative Dittmer is putting forward this legislation to keep the funding alive. For those of you who sit on state government, the full State Government Finance Committee, we did present our change item last week. It's a broader bill that broader change item that does include the certification program with this funding and some additional funding, and it's attached to a broader targeted group business change item, which the governor has included in his budget. I think for those of you who sit on state government finance, you'll be seeing that. And that includes, I think, our agency fiscal note has been attached, has been handed out to all of you. And you notice some differences about how we approach it. I believe Chairman Dittmer has approached with one FTE to do certification. And our fiscal note, which is the same thing that we had put out last year, is just given we expect a front end, a much higher workload on the front end of this process, and we had called for two FTEs and then some programmatic change, and that's where I think the differences in funding go forward. But I think we're very pleased that, again, that Chairman Dittmer introduced this legislation to keep the funding before the legislature and to keep this process alive. And so that's what we wanted to say today. And then, again, I also want to thank my colleagues over at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. They've been very helpful to us throughout the fall in conversations about, some of the needs that the veterans community will have, what services that they can offer, and where we can partner throughout this process, especially on the outreach to the veterans community, to make sure that they understand that this program is out there, that there will be eventually a state certification process, and how that will go about. So, thank you.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner.
And Mr. Chair, again, Mike McKelney from Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And I would just echo Deputy Commissioner Yoakum in the fact that this bill, this has been a policy that's been worked on for some years, and we almost had it last year, except for the funding. Representative Detmer has provided leadership this year, and so it's really been a good working relationship between the agencies, and I think we've finally got things worked out the way they need to be, and I would just compliment the committee for moving this bill forward.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one question for either Mr. McElhaney or for Representative Detmer. Previously, I was with a company and was the representative for that veteran-owned business that processed the application for certification, which we ended up securing. And I recall that it was a very cumbersome process. And once we secured that certification, I then remember looking at like what it was going to look like to actually go through the bidding process and secure, you know, business. And I remember thinking how overwhelming that looked. And then I was no longer with the company, so I didn't actually have that experience to follow through. But I'm wondering now, with a state program, how much more streamlined in any way might this be relative to the what the federal program was, just practically?
Director, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Pugh. That's the whole key, is streamline the process and do it within our own state. And any time you can get two agencies to be working together, the same sheet of music, singing Kumbaya, we might get things done. And I really believe that it's a nonpartisan issue. We work together to try to do what's right for our veterans. And if we can get them certified here in the state of Minnesota, because people know these businesses then, and we need to realize, just because you are certified as veterans-owned small business, that doesn't guarantee you're going to get the bid. I mean, you still have to be have some history on your business. You got to, you know, do work like just like any other business and get out there and put your bids in, and hopefully you'll get some work. So I feel good about what we're doing, and I hope that we can carry this through to the next committee. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Newton,
any other questions? Representative Newton, did you have a question?
Mr. Chair, no, I don't have a question. I just wanted to thank Representative Detmer for this. We have been working on this for years, and I sometimes wondered whether we'd ever get to this point. And I'm very, very happy to see this go forward.
And we have one more, Mr. Chair. We have one more testifier here that I know has also been working on this for a few years, too.
Good morning again, Mr. Chairman.
One moment,
of the committee.
Chair recognizes Representative Ward. You had a question?
Kind of a process question, so I just don't want to do our voting on the bill and then have the meeting adjourned. So I have a question for the committee as a whole afterward, there's a moment to do
that.
We'll
come back to you then. Yes. Mr. Kaiser, I think you were talking.
Yes, sir. Members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, my name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the member of the United Veterans Legislative Council, which is part of the process for veteran-owned businesses being certified with the new Viking Stadium project. And this process of having the state of Minnesota certify who's a veteran-owned business really is a heads up positive thing to happen, because right now, in order for the equity program to work at the Vikings Stadium, they have women, minorities, and veterans, and the veterans process is that you have to get the pre-qualifications for the VA first before you can apply for being involved with Mortenson Construction Company and Ryan Construction Company at the veterans the Vikings Stadium project. It's a daunting past process to do that, and that being the case, this would alleviate that problem, because that is not a state project. It's a corporate capitalistic project, but they look for a way that they could certify who's a veteran-owned business. Well, there's no other way in doing it other than the current process, and it takes too long. This is a process that would alleviate that, and it's needed, because right now veteran-owned businesses are not really coming forward with that certification because it takes so long to do it, and they have other ways of trying to make money, and it costs the time and effort to do that. And unfortunately, even though we try to find them and get them and put them in the process, it's difficult to do. This alleviates that. It also helps with MnDOT, because MnDOT would accept this as their process for getting veteran-owned businesses into the MnDOT process, because that's, again, the only way that they could do it is have a VA certification. This eliminates that. The women and minorities and veterans that have the same qualifications as having their bylaws and their financial statements and everything state the same as they do with the Department of Admin, and that's, they would have that part that it would be about the same. And then Department of Veteran Affairs would certify that they are veterans, and it would just work for both the counties, the states, the cities, the municipalities, and the state of Minnesota and MnDOT to get these companies and have another process to get them. So again, you're making Minnesota more veteran friendly and encouraging more veterans to start businesses and get their paperwork and ducks in a row so they can get in the process of building businesses in the state of Minnesota.
Yes, Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Detmer had mentioned just about explaining a little bit about the process, and I probably won't be able to do it as to the extent that some of my colleagues who are here that run this on a day in, day out business. And just to make sure that we're all on the same record, we do believe that we can run a more efficient program than at the federal level, and hopefully get through folks more quickly. We do just want to make sure that folks do understand it's there's a couple parts of this process, and there's the part that the Department of Veterans Affairs can definitely help us on, have an expertise with, and save us some time, which is the verification of if someone is an actual veteran. On the Department of Administration side, and it's one of the that's where the personnel issue and the funding issue comes in. Is there still the certification process that we, whether it be for a veteran-owned business or a minority or woman-owned business that would participate in the targeted group business side? There's still the verification processes for that go for who actually owns a business to make sure that there's not fraudulent activity going on and do the actual verification. And that's an intensive process. And so there's still a fair amount of work that's being done at the Department of Administration side. So Department of Veterans Affairs can will help us with ensuring that the person whose name is listed as the owner of the company is indeed a veteran. And then we need to go through and make sure that they do have actual ownership of the company, and that the company meets, you know, the state and federal size limits, all those types of things, and that gets to be a intensive process. But that being said, we think that we can do this in a great conversation that we had with Representative Detmer a couple weeks ago in front of the MAG group is the fact that making sure that we're doing a lot of the work on the front end of this process. It doesn't help anybody to have an application that makes it either to the Department of Administration or the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs that's incomplete, because that just gets somebody lost in the black hole and gets the process going back and forth, where somebody gets lost in the process, and that may have been Representative Pugh's experience going through this process, I don't know. But so we want to make sure that folks are submitting the paperwork that's needed up front and getting that assistance that they need, and that's what makes this process work much more smoothly, regardless of where the certification is done. And I think that these are the great conversations that we've had leading up to this point. I think that there will be some great opportunities in there. But I just wanted you to have an understanding, a little bit of how the process works at a 10,000-foot level. Thank you.
Representative Detmer, any further discussion? Representative Ward, you had.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, this is just the first step. We still have to go through other committees and I appreciate the input from the agencies here and that and also testimony here. Again, I would like to renew my my motion.
Before that,
okay, go ahead.
We have one other person that would like to testify.
Okay. Okay.
You state your name for the record, please, and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Patrick Hines. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Our cities have a long history of hiring and recruiting veterans for city government service. In many ways, veterans are often a natural fit for municipal employment, especially in the area of law enforcement. We frequently work with the Department of Veterans Affairs and other stakeholders to make sure that existing veterans preference programs are implemented properly and to ensure that they meet the goals and to provide opportunities for our veterans. We do have some concerns about how this bill is drafted. Most of the testimony has focused on shifting the certification process from the federal government to the state government, and we certainly have no problem with that, and listening to the testimony, it seems to make sense. The bill does, however, impose additional requirements on municipalities that are not currently in law, and both the League of Cities and the Association of Minnesota Counties wanted to testify to those points. It will require municipal governments to implement a new veterans benefit veterans preference program. Current law allows cities and counties to do that. This would require that, and as the Department of Administration noted, these things take time and money, and while the Department of Administration might have a fiscal note for it, local governments will not have a fiscal note, so we want to bring attention to the fact that it will impose some costs on our government. In addition, it will increase, or it has the potential, as the fiscal note notes, to increase construction costs on these projects by up to 6%. That money is coming out of the local tax base, and obviously the legislature can decide whether that's a good use of the money or not, but there are many things that can drive up the cost of projects, such as prevailing wage and other preference programs. So we did want to note that, and also on a smaller note, the effective date is effective immediately following enactment. We would prefer that the effective date be pushed out farther because it is requiring cities to put some programs in place, and we'd like to have a little time to do that if should this bill go forward. Otherwise, our cities end up violating the law the day it becomes effective, and we'd prefer not to have that happen if possible. So those are our and then I should add one other point. I'm sorry for backtracking, but in terms of what a city has to do to implement this program, it's not entirely clear how this would interact with existing bidding requirements. Current law allows cities to implement best value contracting or award bids to the lowest responsible bidder. Many times that involves awarding points to contractors based on their experience with certain types of projects. And if we are required to implement a new preference program that meets requirements of the rules under the Department of Administration, it's really not clear how those will work and whether we're having a situation where the Department of Administration may be able to tell a city that its lowest responsible bidder requirements don't mesh with their veterans preference program. So we will continue to work with the Department of Administration on that. We just want to raise that concern because construction bidding is complicated, and when you add a level of complexity, sometimes you have consequences. So I'll stand for any questions if you have any. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hines, could you clarify for me how the potential cost could increase by 6% to local units of government, to taxpayers? I'm not clear about that.
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pugh, the preference program states that a project would be awarded up to a 6% preference on a bid by a veteran-owned business. So in that, normally you would award the lowest responsible bidder. With a preference program, a bidder who is a veteran-owned business, which has a bid that's 6% higher, would be awarded the contract, and so instead of having that $1 million contract awarded, you would have a $1,060,000 contract awarded, and so that cost is then borne by the taxpayer. So anytime you have a preference program, there's the potential for the cost to increase.
Thank you.
Representative Detmer, perhaps these are concerns that Mr. Hines has indicated that you and the Department of Men could work with as the bill proceeds on to the next committee and maybe address some of these concerns that you might have.
Well, definitely. You know, it's got to go to the next committee, Mr. Hines, Mr. Chair. And if there's some, I think we're talking about Section 4, subsection 10, veteran preferences. The city must award veterans-owned small businesses a 6% preference in amount bid for on a public infrastructure project funded by the issuance of general obligation bonds and authorized in subsection 3, and any businesses that has been certified under the section 16C19, paragraph D, is eligible for a preference. My understanding is that it's up to 6%. But still a company still has to meet the bid requirements set down by the municipality, whether mm-hmm. it's county. I know Chisago County, they've already set up a preferences for veterans. But I'm willing to work with whether it's the city, municipalities, or counties to get the wording the way that would be workable for all municipalities. And the date, we can certainly work on that date, too. So.
Any other questions for Mr. Hines? I understand there are some more people that would like to testify. Again, would you state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, please?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, committee members. For the record, my name is Tim Warkey. I represent the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. We're the state's largest and oldest general contractor construction association. We represent some 450 contractor and subcontractor members. I'd like to point out in my remarks, however, that over 90% of our members employ fewer than 20 persons. So the balance of our membership are smaller local community-based contractors. And our concern, I've testified in the past on some of these preference type bills in programs, et cetera, and have worked with Representative Detmer and on the Senate side on these as well. Just a couple of general comments. We're not opposed at all. In fact, we're very favorable to any program that can assist veterans. And our member firms do all they can to employ veterans. The skill sets transfer very well from military skills to construction companies. Our concern and the reason I'm here today is to testify in favor of the free market. I think on these programs like this, our concern is that the public contracting marketplace is very, very competitive and the margins are very low on that work. And these are companies in all of your communities that compete fiercely on price. And these preference programs, as Representative Pugh asked about, do lead to a skewing at times in the marketplace where, for various reasons that are noble in intent and are worthwhile from a policy perspective, can change the outcome of the bidding environment, where we are now not talking about something that is price-related but has something that relates to a larger societal or other type of goal. So, Mr. Hines testified on some things with respect to the local communities. Our concern is the compulsory nature of that as it relates to some 450 municipalities and whether or not they would be able to develop their program to be uniform. We do not want a situation where we have a multitude of different programs administered differently out there in the bidding environment. It leads to things like bid protests and all kinds of other things that are not very good in the marketplace. So with that, I'm going to leave my comments and pledge to Chair Detmer that we'd be willing to take a look at differences in how this language may proceed. So I'll stand for any questions. Thank you.
Seeing none, is there anyone else that would wish to testify?
Mr. Chair, I have a question in terms of the different targeted groups, and maybe research could fill us in on here. How many different targeted groups that have preferences? I believe if we're talking, you know, I know that I'm assuming that the counties and municipalities would have to work with these other targeted groups that have preferences too, I'm assuming, or is it just for the state contracts? And maybe that question might be good for the next committee. But with that, I'd be willing to work with counties and the cities, municipalities, to put together some language that we can go forward with.
Evidently, we have someone that can answer some of those questions here. Yes, would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Dorothy Lovejoy. I'm with the Department of Administration.
Would you proceed, Ms. Lovejoy?
Yes, Representative Ed asked the question regarding how many other groups are targeted or have preferences in public purchasing. For the Department of Administration programs, we have programs for women, minorities, disabled, and for small businesses located in economically disadvantaged areas of the state, which is 40 counties of Minnesota, almost half. Excuse me. And we have veteran-owned preference, as well as preferences for DEED and DHS certified providers. And that's typically extended employment facilities, day rehabilitation facilities.
Representative Dedmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to testifier, would that include, I guess it's good for all of us to maybe be briefed on this. Is that just state contracts, or would it include counties, municipalities, and so forth in terms of the preferences?
Ms. Lovejoy.
Mr. Chair, members, for the preferences that are provided in administration, that is only on state purchasing that we are administering, so our own contracting.
Representative Dedmer.
Are we ready to refer to the next committee? That's where I'm at. I renew my motion.
I'd like to extend that privilege to you, sir.
I renew my motion that House File 141 be referred, as amended, be referred to the Committee of State Government Finance, and I will continue working on the language.
Those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. It is carried. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to perhaps Chair Dedmer can answer this better. I'm new on the committee, so I need a little help understanding what the process is. I'm seeing a lot of money talked about, and of course it's going to go to taxes, but it seems that the committee is forwarding multiple bills that are going to be impacting benefits for veterans, and there will be costs. Are we going to have a chance as a committee to prioritize these, or are we going to leave that up to the tax committee to determine which of these bills are our highest priority?
Mr. Chair.
Representative
Ward. Good question. I think this is the first stop for some of these bills, and they go to the tax, or this House File 141 will be going to state government finance. And many times when it goes from one committee to the next, we're working on the language to fine-tune it. And hopefully when it gets to the great Committee on Ways and Means, or part of an omnibus bill, hopefully, and even when we get into the conference committee, sometimes things change. So I think it's a work in progress, and I hope that now this committee has a better understanding what this bill will do. And when it gets on to the state government finance, there's going to be some changes in it. So I hope that answers your question.
Sure.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Ward's question, and thank you, Representative and Chair Detmer, for that. This is a slightly different kind of committee. We have a number of them in the legislature this year in the House where they are or division of. And so this group gets a chance to hear policy and finance, but because we don't have any finance jurisdiction and typically don't have complete policy jurisdiction on this, it's a subdivision or a committee of the whole. So we would see a lot of our activities up in for financing and ultimate into the State Government Finance and Veterans Affairs Committee. And so this is probably a unique situation where we get a chance to vet out a lot of things and say, yep, we agree these things should move forward, or they don't. And then if they move forward, then if you're on that particular finance committee, you'll have the opportunity to weigh in on those activities. Very much the same way that the aging committee is set up this year to go into health and human services, where they will hear that specific topic area. I don't know if that provides any additional clarification and help, but that's been my experience in having been both different, I'll just put it this way, different majorities setting committees in the House.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. It is helpful. It just seems like we're getting a long list of bills that are asking for money, and a lot of validity to all of them. Just, you know, if we can't do them all, who gets to decide what the priorities are? And that was my question. Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could just to that point, to the credit of Representatives Detmer and Newton, when this had been in a previous structure where there wasn't a separate division for Veterans Affairs, they attempted to try to put together an omnibus bill that dealt strictly with veterans-related activities, but were unsuccessful in being able to get to that concept rolled into the state finance bill or to get that omnibus bill, but these two gentlemen to my left have worked hard to be able to see that could happen under previous structures.
Any further comments? With that, we're adjourned.